Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I don't like pina coladas or getting caught in the rain. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew. Why a Rupert Holmes reference?
I don't know. Last week I referenced AC/DC. That was what the first thing that popped in my mind.
So of course you go naturally from AC/DC to Rupert Holmes.
Yes. That's the way my mind works, guys. It's like a carnival calliope up there all the time.
That's good. You got what are you doing talking the Manilow Diamond? I don't know if you go that angle.
No. I should have done Manilow Diamond so we could do some duetting, but
just a thought.
You maybe don't bring time. Me no, lead parts like in this movie. Hey guys, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're Horrible PCast, HORRORBULLPCAST. Everywhere else, we're just the Horrible Podcast.
Search us.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty easy to find.
If you can find Ustream, if you know where Ustream is, you can find us on other things. Go like us, tweet at us, say hello, email us at wolfmansgotnards@thehorriblepodcast.com.
Basically, what we're asking is to come at us, bros.
Yep.
Ladies.
And non-bros.
Yeah, non-bros. We embrace.
We welcome everyone.
Yeah.
We're equal welcoming.
We're inclusive of non-bros.
Yeah.
And ladies.
Except for bros, actually. Bros stay away from us, bros.
Nope. Yeah.
I don't want bros.
Don't come at us, bros. Because we'll bring it. I mean, Tyler's got old man strength.
He does.
Yeah, he's going to tear some shit up.
And Brian's just an old man.
Drew just has strength. Went and picked up food tonight, and after I ordered, I pointed to Drew. I was like, "My dad will be paying for this
because I have a sweater."
Yeah, he had a sweater on.
Brian, that's a visual joke. But we're on Ustream right now, which you can just search for the Horrible Podcast Ustream, and we're on there. So we do it every week, live and video.
Sweater.
It's an okay sweater.
Really?
Yeah, I saw it. I was like, "Oh well, I guess."
I would say it's a Cosby sweater, but I really don't want to say Bill Cosby's name anymore.
Cosby stock's way down
it's
this week.
It's actually an Arnold Palmer.
There we go. I'll take that.
It's an actual vintage Arnold Palmer.
Oh, is it for real? How about that? Yeah. Some history behind this sweater.
Yeah.
I mean, Arnold Palmer didn't wear it.
No, but your grandfather did?
Yes.
No?
Yeah.
I think I could smell the Old Spice. And,
you can, yeah.
What's the other? Brut on it as we speak.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dracar Noir.
Or what did my grandfather wear? He always used lava.
The soap
to get the grease out from under his hands.
And pipe tobacco.
No, he didn't smoke.
No, I'm just saying you should smell.
Oh, pipe. Yes, I got
you. That's the only thing you should smell.
And Budweiser. My grandfather, when he came home from the shipyard, he always required a scotch and soda and a Budweiser chaser.
Yeah, that's a good call.
And my grandmother always had it waiting for him. I was always like, "What is going on here, Grandma? Why does Grandpa have to drink his dinner?" Then the beating started. Hey, tonight's episode, guys, we're doing Starry Eyes.
I wish we could do like an effect on our eyes right now.
How about I do? I'll do one.
Oh,
better.
I can. Oh, I can't.
Starry eyes, paint your palette blue and gray. Nobody? Don McLean?
Nope.
Starry Starry Night?
Nothing.
Nope.
American Pie is the only one I know.
Well, listen to Vincent, parenthetical Starry Starry Night.
Right. That was okay. his one of his other, he had like three hits maybe, I think. Four.
Maybe.
That's one of them, yeah.
The only one I care about is American Pie.
The Gordon Lightfoot of 1978.
So yeah, Starry Eyes, I got to be honest, really dug the movie. I can't wait to get into what you guys had to say. It's totally different from what I imagined it to be. And every time I thought that I had the movie pegged, it did something else. And I really dug that.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, you absolutely. After you.
I was going to say, it's one of the first movies I've watched in a while. And I just got the eye doctor yesterday and I just got my eyes dilated. And so about the only thing I do is watch a movie on my TV because it's the biggest thing. And I was planning to do a little look into Starry Eyes a little bit before that. I'd read some tweets and all, but I hadn't done my full-fledged, you know, my leg work on it yet.
Mm-hmm. Just so you were clear, Drew does an intensive 10-hour historical research of Starry Eyes.
Legwork.
Directors, like, yeah. Writers, actors, actresses. He does all of it. Producers gets a full. We have a full sheet that's given to us every episode. We don't reference it that often, but he does have it.
Yeah, it's just handy. I mean, yeah, he's kind of like the Mark Zuckerberg of the podcast. He's just always coding, but instead of coding, he's like researching movies. That's how he knows all this shit.
What I like though is with most of these movies we do, especially these like this, it's just a blank sheet of paper really because there's not that much information on anything.
I know.
I sit there for 10 hours and just stare at a wall.
He's like, this $180 subscription to IMDb Pro was bullshit.
So yeah, Starry Eyes is, I mean,
I was just gonna say real quick. I didn't actually finish my thought.
Sure.
It's I knew nothing about it really going into it because I had hoped to before I watched it, and it surprised me at nearly every turn in a positive way. I mean, like with anything like this, I mean, it had some a couple of wrong turns maybe, and
But not like the movie Wrong Turn. The movie Wrong Turn had far many more wrong turns than this movie.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Hey. Funny coincidence, Wrong Turn 6 came out this week.
Yeah.
I have not seen any of the Wrong Turns.
I saw the first one.
The first, like the middle ones are all made by like the poor man's Darren Lynn Bozeman, though. It's like the same guy made them on Declan, I can't think of his last name, Declan something. And he made all the ones in the middle. And I think this might be one of the first ones that he didn't do, if I recall.
Declan, I mean, let me go ahead and guess his name. Last Step name starts with Mac.
Maybe.
I don't know, because that's a very Scottish name.
Look it up now. So, yeah, I mean, Starry Eyes is a movie that I've just seen hyped a lot. I've been tweeting about it and watched a couple of trailers, and I really dug not just the art style, not the art style, that's a video game term, but just the visuals, the cinematography, and the sound design, like the way that the soundtrack went. So I was really pumped about this, and we sort of talked about what movie we want to do this week, and I've been... Starry Eyes, full steam ahead the entire time. So I was really pumped about it.
I was going to be right. I was just going to guess Declan O'Brien, and that's what it was.
The movie is pretty much a non-name cast. I mean, I recognized, what's his name, Noah Segan?
Yeah, he's been in some
things. He was in Looper.
Dawson's Creek?
Was he in Dawson's Creek?
It was on his filmography.
He was in Brick. I recognize him from Brick.
Yeah. So he's a Rian Johnson.
Yeah, so he's Rian Johnson because that's Looper and Brick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I think he has a new film coming out. Spoiler alert, that may or may not be coming to CFF. Redeemer, I think is what it is.
Cool.
And I enjoyed his part, but other than him, I didn't recognize anybody else in the film.
Anybody? You didn't recognize anybody?
Anybody.
I'm sorry. Let me rephrase.
I recognize almost everybody in this movie.
Did you?
Yeah.
Who else was in there that...
So Pat Healy,
yeah, fuck it, yes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Amanda Fuller. What funny connection? this is random. Amanda Fuller played the best friend who gets, spoiler alert, killed at the end. She played Brittany Murphy in the Lifetime movie version of the Brittany Murphy story, which I have to say, Kate's not gonna like this, but she was obsessed with when it came out. Like that movie, she was like, she wasn't obsessed because it was. She wasn't obsessed with it because she was like really, she was interested in like Brittany Murphy's story, but then the movie came out and Amanda Fuller was such a weird and bad Brittany Murphy that she just watched it over and over again, like rapt by it. She was like, I can't believe how bad she is as Brittany Murphy. So I instantly recognized her and ran back to the back. I was like, Kate, look who it is. It's Brittany.
The guy I recognized though is, and I recognized his name in the credits, and I was like, Mark Center, who is that? And
then Gene Simmonson?
And then as soon as I saw him, Ray Pye
from The Lost. Yeah.
Okay, yes. Okay,
he played the assistant perfectly.
Really weird guy at the audition.
Yeah, he's always the really weird guy.
Let me rephrase my comment.
Good job, Sarah. Today will be very different, Sarah.
You can't walk away now, Sarah.
No, that's the old
also
guy.
Maria Olson's in a lot of stuff. She was the casting director, not Mark. Center.
Yeah.
But she's in a lot of stuff. Like she's that woman. Yeah. Like she's in a lot of stuff. I think she was in like a Paranormal Act. I don't know. Like she was in something like that. But she has a very familiar face. But and even the main character, the girl who plays Sarah, she looks familiar. But I looked at her credits and didn't see anything, but I almost feel like she was in a VHS, like in VHS or one of those movies.
Isn't she in ABCs of Death?
She was really good.
You
she was
can't awesome. Walk away now, Sarah.
What's weird? Like, what would be a great thing to do now is make a sequel about how the Alex Esso, the girl who plays Sarah, actually did all of this to become famous. Like, this is her breakthrough role. That would be a very meta sequel to do.
And let's just say that the most horrifying part of this film is not the horror aspect, but could you imagine having to be an unknown actor / actress trying to make your way through this bullshit?
Yeah,
that
awful.
Stressed me the fuck out.
Me too.
All of it did. Like the whole the auditions, the phone calls. Is it the friend that was really shitty that every time she said something would
fucking bitch.
Oh, the worst. Man, she was just
awful.
Like, are you sure that's the best thing to do? I know those people. Like,
yeah.
She was the worst.
Also, not just that, but like the perfect kind of passive aggressive. Like from the very first scene where she was like, it's probably, you know, it's I kind of hated the director. So it's kind of good that you didn't get this role. Like just the worst kind of passive aggressive.
Yeah, she's
like,
awful.
That she's, you know, oh, we're all still friends, but I'm going to make everything I say to you is going to be a shitty dig at you.
Yeah.
Oh, everything.
Yeah. Oh, man. That, the person who portrayed that part played it perfectly, too.
She did a great job.
Yeah. Like, it was just, she delivered it just nice enough to not be shitty.
Well, no, the thing is,
it's very subtle.
That everybody else is going to let her get away with it. And
right.
So they're going to say, oh, she didn't mean it. She was just being funny. That's the problem with that person. She does it just that much that no one else will call her on her bullshit.
Yeah.
And that one person, and they act like you're the asshole when you're finally like, when you finally blow up at that person, it's like, well, they didn't mean it. It's like, yeah, they meant it.
And that's Fabian Therese, who was also in John Dies at the End, which we did an episode of.
Yeah. That's right. Episode 20.
I know. At this point, like 22, I think. Because I think that's when we debuted the first
Venomous Maximus.
Yeah, Venomous Maximus. Yeah. So long time ago.
Yes,
but yeah, I think the acting is really what makes this movie shine, because it's very, a lot of it's very subtle acting.
It's very Sofia Coppola acting, and I thought even the movie itself felt a lot like that. Like it felt like it would fit in even with, like, I don't know what. The Bling Ring or something like that. Something like that.
Kind of detached, like very beautiful, detached people from like what's actually happening. Like they're involved, but they seem like at arm's length or separated or divided from it. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting comment.
Yeah, well, that's just what I thought. A lot of the movie thought is very much, it was like, it's like a Sofia Coppola horror movie is what I felt at times. After what was a ridiculously awesome opening, the opening credits were so... What I mean, I don't know. I was trying to like put my finger on it, but it just felt had that huge 70s occult.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, Argento, which even later the mosaic, the tile outside of Estrella's films was so something out of, I don't know, Suspiria or any of the Mother trilogy that Argento had, like apartment building kind of place like that. It was so 70s, and, you know, I liked a lot of the design like that. It really took me to a subgenre of horror that I'm always really attracted to, is that 70s occult kind of.
Did you guys look up what Astraeus is?
Mm-mm.
So apparently, Astraeus is an astrological titan in Greek mythology.
Hmm.
I looked that up. I was like, that has to mean something, Astraeus. So anyway, that's all I had to say.
It also sounds like Australia, which is Spanish for star.
It also sounds like the Neverending Story and Astraeus.
What? Atreyu?
Stretch.
Atreyu?
I got it. I made it work.
Did you? The movie that it reminds me of, which we did recently on the podcast, was called... Oh, shit. I've forgotten the name of the movie. Contracted.
Yes. I have a couple of Contracted notes. Yeah.
The last sequence, like her... The what maggots. Happens to her feels very much like Contracted. I agreed, yeah.
Even, like, one kind of... dehumanizing happened because of a bad act in Contracted, but here it's sort of like a systematic kind of like manipulation that's going on. And if this were the like late 90s, early 2000s, you'd find these movies in like a DVD 2-pack at the store. Like, oh, Walmart just has this movie for $9.78.
You know, and some of the, I'll be honest, like later towards the end when she became... We'll get to that point later, but I actually got reminded of the whole Goat Witch short that we watched. The whole rebirth of this new thing, creature that would come out.
Yeah. Or what's especially,
Nails.
What's the E. Eliash Merhige movie? Or I think I'm mispronouncing it.
Oh, right.
But not the guy who did Shadow of the Vampire, but his first movie. Do you remember, like, it reminds me a lot of that.
I can't think. All I can think of is follow-up to that now, which is Suspect Zero. And that's all I can think of now. Oh, crap.
The Ben Stiller movie?
No, Begotten.
That's Begotten. That's it.
Begotten, okay.
Begotten, yeah. Like, it reminds me a lot of that. Oh, that movie's so messed up. That movie is messed up.
Just remembered it.
Oh, that thing's messed up. That student Begotten. Art project. Yeah, Begotten is so messed up.
It's in our Dropbox. I have to go watch it again.
Yeah. It's real messed up.
We'd start talking about her being sick, and on a pull back from that, because honestly, my dirty little secret about the movie there is when it gets kind of more straightforward horror-y, mm-hmm. I kind of lost some of my interest in it more than like that first, gosh, I mean, it's more than half of it, it feels like, but maybe it's not, that it had this whole black swan psychological kind of, but I still knew that there was like something really bad going on, but I honestly couldn't still put my finger on it. Maybe these are just really bad people who wear pentagrams. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's obviously Satan.
But that's the thing. It's the first half, it is or it isn't, because we don't, because it's so implicitly shown throughout that. Like, it's super creepy. It's like, maybe these are just bad people, and that's what happens when you deal with Hollywood, which is a great example of that. But then, yeah, they were literally like Satan occult kind of shit.
That, the producer that she goes to,
he's awesome.
He's very awesome, really, and very creepy. He did a great job.
Very Christopher Plummer-y.
That's my Christopher Plummer's exactly who he reminded me of. But also, whenever I hear someone mention that white devil, that's exactly the face that I see.
Yeah. It's interesting, Drew, that you bring up Aronofsky, because the movie I thought of about halfway through was Requiem for a Dream. So Black Swan definitely fits into that. Like, it definitely has an Aronofsky kind of sort of feel to it. And I definitely got that vibe, especially once she starts getting, I thought maybe a little bit of it was going to be like psychological horror, where she kind of loses it a little bit. So kind of like, I guess also Polanski, to drop another name, but I really love this movie. The only part that I think I actually think was a misstep was the length of time that she spends getting sick. I thought that was a little too long.
Absolutely agree. Yeah.
So beyond that, though, I thought this movie was
She just wakes up and she's sick.
No, I think that it just that sequence pull, like,
it's too long. Like, it's too much, like, puking and, hey, are you okay? Like, I think
it's too it's too samey almost. Like, there's just, like, it needed to get to what the end game was. Mm-hmm. Maybe even, I mean, and maybe that undercuts what they want to do, but I think more to that end game and then more of that end game, perhaps. And I'm saying a whole large sequence.
It was only
that,
20 minutes. But I remember
it's pretty short.
The bad shit, when the typical like gross out horror stuff started to happen, was 20 minutes, because I think as soon as she started, like, the kid walked in the room and I was like, pause.
Yeah.
Daddy, can you come lay with me? I had 20 minutes left in this movie. Let me get through this.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, the setup for this movie, which we haven't even discussed.
As a parent.
It's fantastic.
The setup for this movie is like every working actresses or like aspiring actresses' worst nightmare. She can't get roles, and she works at a shitty fast food restaurant with a boss. Pat Healy could not have been better in his role as the, what is it? It's Taters.
Big Taters.
Big Taters. Oh my God.
I kept trying to understand what her pants were. Like,
they look like a beer. I think they were a beer. Like, I think it was like a glass of beer, maybe.
I want you to appreciate what I'm doing here.
He reminded me so much of the Office Space. Chotskys. Or what was it, though? Not Chotskys.
Tchotchkes. We could go to Tchotchkes. Oh, fuck. I don't remember. It's
this is our flair.
I think
he reminded me so much of that guy, too. Like, apparently, it was not a chain. This was his restaurant. Yeah,
that's what but then again, I got that, and I started to think that, but then part of me started to think, no, that's just what that guy who runs
the manager.
This is his store. Yeah.
Well, it's what's great about another thing that's great about this movie, before we get back into like trailing off into the plot, is that everybody's on a power trip. Like, everyone has a sense of self-importance in this movie. And like, his deal is the inverse of the Faustian bargain that she takes on. Like, hers, because I felt a weird parallel that after she's done all these like demeaning things to get this role, that she goes in and she thinks she doesn't have the role, she doesn't want to do it, and then she has to grovel, and he says, I just want you to appreciate what I'm doing here, and like, I want you to be a tater girl. And it's this weird, like,
the word you said, Faustian, what does that mean?
Shut up.
You just assume that I know what this is.
You know what a Faustian bargain is, you dick.
I did.
But no, like, I think it's a weird inverse, because he's asking her to do the same thing. Like, he's asking her to give up part of her dreams to, like, pay the bills. Like, he wants her to be the face of this thing that's something she doesn't want either. But so it's weird.
But he's only trying to look through her pants, not trying to get in them. Which I kind of waited for that sequence, too. And I'm glad they didn't go there.
Me too.
Like, I thought in that sequence we were going to get her have to almost deal with that same bargain there and have to, and I don't know, at that point I didn't know where we were going with it anyway, and I thought that maybe she was going to. I didn't know where that was going to go.
I thought that, like, the movie has such a great tone, except for a couple, like, there are a couple of weird instances of tone, but yeah, I found that they nailed Pat Healy's character, that he's just trying to make do. He wasn't overly sleazy. Like, in these kinds of movies, all of the male characters tend to be portrayed as, like, these really sleazy assholes. And he's sleazy in a different way. He's just very self-centered and, like, self-aggrandizing. But he's not lecherous in the same way that, obviously, the head of the studio is.
What a difference a mustache makes for Pat Healy. Yeah.
Like, did you really not recognize him?
Pat Healy?
Yeah.
No, I recognize him. I just completely forgot that when we were talking about people who were in it, like, I had Pat Healy notes in my notes.
Sarah's character also reminds me of the girl from The Ring who is at the very beginning, who has the, like makes the weird face, who ends up in the mental hospital later. That's who she reminds me of.
I thought Jessica Harper from Suspiria the entire way through.
Okay.
She does have light look. She does.
That's who I thought, especially with the tight role she was doing, and with the, and like I said, with some of the other Argento kind of notes in the 70s kind of vibe that I got. That's what I really thought was, I thought that kind of Jessica Harper kind of thing.
One thing I think this movie does that I'm kind of enjoying about independent horror now is that it's using these things that would normally be cast on side characters as, like, main plot focuses, and her, the, like, what, I don't know what it's called, her psychological condition, like the pulling of the hair,
right?
Like, that's such an interesting character thing to foist on someone. Like, it usually is just like, girl is perfect except for her ambition, like, but this character has a lot more depth than you would sort of imagine here, and she's not a character you really want to root for after a while. And I kind of like that she's not just, like, having all this stuff heaved upon her and she's perfect and all of this. Like, she has that, like, bare ambition.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, but to that point where you almost wanted to punch her in the face, too. It's like, that was, like, her second audition and she was expecting all this stuff. Like, when they said that, at that point, it's like, come on.
It's like, also weird that, I mean, she just has that, she's just a weak person. And, like, in the end, that's why they chose her, not because she has strength, but because she has weakness.
I almost said Jessica. I was just double checking myself when you said Jessica Harper. I was like, oh, and she also said the girl from Phantom of the Paradise. And I had to look because it's Jessica Harper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing, too, is that the idea that you, all this stuff is happening to you and you didn't think anything bad was going to happen in the trade-off.
Right.
Like, this is not the way the world works.
You don't see that in any of those things. You just see the person who sells her soul to the devil, and then it's awesome.
Yeah. And
you don't see that. You don't see a bad side to it. Usually,
you just assume it's going to be at the end. Like, oh well.
Well, yeah. When you die, you assume that's why I sold it. So it's going to be. So that makes you wonder. Does that mean it's just going to be all good from then on out? You went through the bad shit.
I don't know. Yeah. And she did lose her hair. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It'll grow back.
She still looks pretty good with it.
Yeah, she looks great with her out of her hair.
I mean, the thing is, like, she does sacrifice, but only in the, like, temporal sense, like, in an intemporary sense, because she gets rid of people she doesn't really care for that much for, like, her own success, which is weird.
And are they going to take care of the police investigation?
I don't think there will be one. Do you? Like, I think that's already taken care of because the friend comes home, Brittany Murphy comes home, and there's no one, like, there's no blood or anything there.
And by the way, everyone we know died last night.
I'd like to think that, I don't know. Well, it's interesting, though. I mean, we don't really know what she's getting out of it. And that's always kind of the thing with that bargain with the devil. It's never made quite clear, which I always think is pretty interesting. Like, when he's making the deal with us, like, hey, you just got to give up, you know, you got to kill your old life. It's like, you mean that literally?
Or, here, yes.
No, I know, but that's the thing. But in these situations, like maybe you want to sit there and get that in a little more, you know, explicit writing.
Can you give me more details? Yeah.
What exactly is going to happen? Because, all right, I agree to that. Okay, I agree to that. Okay, that's cool. I don't want to throw up worms. That's kind of gross.
It's always, I mean, that's the thing about the Faustus deal, though, is, like, it preys on the idea of, like, the now. Because that's the thing about Dr. Faustus in the Marlowe writing, is that he just sort of goes, like, I'll worry about it in 20 years. Oh, I'm worried about it in 5. Like,
oh, I think that's where my confusion came in, because I'm thinking of the Goethe Faust, not the
That's your problem.
Two completely different things.
Yeah, that's the Goethe Faust is entirely different from the Marlowe Faust.
I was thinking of Satan showing up as a poodle. And
I was thinking of the Randy Newman Faust. Go look it up.
Wow.
He wrote like a little opera. It's got like
did he?
James Chambers sings part of it. Oh, yeah. It's, check
you
it out.
You got a friend
yeah.
in the
yeah, that's the darkest Pixar movie they've ever made.
Exactly.
Randy Newman goes dark.
Randy Newman.
Faust.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I don't want to go down to hell.
I don't know, devil, if this is the deal I want to make. I love not being in hell.
Yeah.
Short people got deals with the devil.
God.
Hey, everybody who was alive in the 70s, Randy Newman's greatest hits.
Rednecks and the devil.
He looks like the last time I saw him on the Oscars, he looked like a singing turtle.
He looks like singing Michael Moore.
He looks like a singing Roger Ebert. Post-op.
Without the jaw.
So, yeah. So,
oh, I guess I'll just ignore
Sarah,
that.
I laughed.
Did you? It must be cut out.
Yeah, like, my audio cut out for a second. Check the tape. Sarah goes in for this audition in this movie, and they're only interested in her when she does the weird thing that she does only in private. And that should be a signal.
But how did they catch it? That's the other thing, too.
It's the devil.
I know. Did they follow her to the bathroom, or did they... They had some... That's the thing.
Obviously, it's mic'd and recorded.
Everything is mic'd and recorded there. It's like Prince's studio. They were actually at Paisley Park, and that's why, because there is a microphone in every room.
If the bra fits.
But no, that was awesome. And then so she gets a call back.
Call back.
Well, she gets a call back, but this could have been two totally different movies, and I would have been satisfied with either. Like, you could have, for me, you could have almost stretched the first act of this movie into an entire movie to see how much when I first saw the trailer, I thought that this movie is going to be about how far someone would go to take a role, like how far someone would go to kind of like Black Swan. So I expected there to be more toying with what she would do to be in the movie, but it's not that at all.
And I would have, and like I said, that's what I think I would have preferred. Like I said, I think that's the one part. Like I said, my dirty little secret is once it went true horror, I kind of checked out a little bit more. Yeah. I liked this a lot more when it was much more the psychological, you know, Star is Born, all about Eve, dealing with, you know, what, like you said, what will you do to be famous, kind of deal. What
hey Hollywood, let me go ahead and put this out there. If me becoming famous just requires me
taking a shot in the mouth.
Me blowing someone, count me in because I'm there. I mean, you can record it too. It's fine. I know what guys. I mean, I'm a guy. I know what I like. I'm gonna be fine at it.
God. I mean, it's. I mean, hey, if
hey,
it's,
listen,
even old creepy Christopher Plummer.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Real Christopher Plummer.
Now we go to not Christopher Plummer, but what's the other Christopher? Saruman.
Christopher Lee?
Yeah. Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee. He's 95, right? He's super old. anyway. Yeah.
Joke.
I mean,
I'm sorry, I have a Christopher Lee fetish. Jesus Christ.
It's the death metal album.
Christopher Lee fetish.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I almost would have preferred, though, to see how far it would go. But then.
How far would you go, Tyler?
I don't know. Like, there's A, there's no guarantee. B, I don't know that I'd want to be famous. Like I don't have that part, I don't think. Like I want
someone was to say, hey, we can make all this bullshit, which, you know, there's a part where she's at the party and is watching all these people when she finally decides that, oh, I'm gonna fucking do this, because she's listening to these people talk and it's just getting the banality of it. Like the whole idea
She had taken drugs
was but
in a pool.
But they're all
very Requiem for a Dream esque.
Yeah, and she saw one girl, the girl she didn't like, kiss the guy that I think we're supposed to in a regular movie think she kind of liked. Mm-hmm.
No, but even just the conversations they were having about the future and how this, you know, all these, like the one Noah Segan wanted her to be in his film and stuff like that. Just that idea. It's the same reaction I would have is if my neighbors came over and wanted to talk about my lawn, and I just want to grab them, push my hand in their face, and push them down and tell them to shut up. Because I can't talk about this banality.
Yeah.
It's that same reaction too. It's like I would blow anybody to get out of this suburbs.
I think that would have been more effective because I didn't get that. She takes a drug and she goes and swims around in a pool and watches half naked people in a pool swim around. Then she sees that director guy kiss the other girl and she's like, oh, she's getting a role because she's, you know, doing that. I'm going to go and do this.
No, that's interesting that I saw it completely different. I saw it as the her just thinking, God, this is fucking ridiculous. The monotony of these conversations and the...
They hadn't had any conversations.
But
no one was talking.
But up to that point, like the whole...
Yeah.
We liked the conversation everything with they the said director.
Was about directing and films and can you be my film? I just saw that whole thing as a whole, like...
I kind of see...
Personally, I understand. I see what you're saying, but that's the idea that I got too, is that it's just that this constant day in, day out struggle of monotony of, oh, you should be my film. I have this script. We should do this. You should shoot this. And she's just like, fuck it. I don't want to do any of this anymore. All I want to do is become a star, be famous, and not have to deal with any of these assholes anymore.
Because she does want the shortcut. Like, that's kind of, you know, that's part of her character. That's kind of what I like too, is that she's not. Is it called a Mary Sue when the character just does all the right things, or is that a Pollyanna? I don't know. Whatever.
The bright side and everything.
Hmm?
Pollyanna sees the bright side and everything.
So she's definitely not a Pollyanna.
She's the ultimate optimist kind of deal.
But she just wants the shortcut. Like, I just don't know that I'd want that kind of shortcut to. I just don't think that I would be able to handle it personally. I think that, like, that is the weird. When you talk about the Faustian bargain of fame, like, that's what happens. Like, here's your shot. Take it, and you have to hang on to it though because it's fleeting. And unless you're someone who can manage to stay in the limelight, it's going to fade. So, like, what have you compromised in your life in order to get where you go? And like the metaphor becomes very literal here at the end because she literally sacrifices her friends and her old life to be famous. But it works on a metaphorical level, and I just don't know that I don't know that I'm equipped for it. You guys know how anxious I am as a person.
No, it's a good. It was a good movie to make me think about, like, what would I do to become, is fame the ultimate, like, is that the end? Like, is that what you want, that fame? Or does she just want to be able to be a working actress that gets paid for stuff?
My problem is I just want more specificity than she's like, let's be clear. What am I getting?
What is this?
What am I
BJ
doing?
Gonna get me?
Drew would be if Drew were in this movie, it would be an hour and a half of him reading a legal document. Like, so here in section 4, part B, you say one shot in the mouth. Is that just one?
I lost my boner like an hour and 15 minutes ago.
That dude had, you know, Viagra, Cialis, or whatever. He was ready for however long he needed.
I like to think of him as the Bill Hicks idea of Satan, where it's like this just monster cock that comes out.
I think of him kind of like, this is more of the Raisin in the Sun devil that sort of shows up like, I have this deal, you can take it, and it'll get you somewhere, but maybe not.
Shucks.
Was he the devil or just one of those guys who just, he was another guy who'd sold his soul at some point to get where he was?
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, no, I mean, he is
his deal to keep his, you know, deal going.
He's kind of an avatar of the devil, it seems. Yeah. Like, he is just in place of, like, he is the sort of Satan by proxy in this movie.
Satan by proxy.
Which is the most boring kind of Satan. Satan by proxy.
Yeah, he has to bring in as many nubile souls as possible.
I like to imagine Satan as the Pat Healy of bosses, too. Like, you know, I mean, you used to like bring in like 20, 30 new souls a day or a week. Now you're doing like 15, 16. Let's step it up. Let's step it up, old Christopher dude.
I like to think that actually is the devil, and he's falling on hard times, and he's got to work at Big Taters. And this other guy who, you know,
Pat Healy.
God damn it. That
Pat Healy is the devil.
I think it works. I think it also works on the level that, or what's interesting is that this studio has also sort of fallen on hard times. Unless I misread the movie, that like they've So I wonder what that is about. Like, I know that it's sort of like a plot driving thing. Like, oh, they're not quite as popular. It's not like they're not like the biggest studio in town. Which it seems like if you could just pluck some like hapless stranger out of the obscurity, that you'd be a lot more famous than you were. So I don't know. I do like that the movie doesn't say that she's going to definitely become famous. Like, this is not the genie's wish. That it's still like there's still a lot up in the air about what level of fame she's going to get, because she's going to be in a movie called The Silver Scream.
Yeah, which that one awful girl made clear. Yeah. Not a title.
Not a good title. Not at all.
Are you really going to be in a movie called The Silver Screen?
You sucked a guy's cock for that.
Was it almost a literal little nod at these type movies that haven't been popular for a while, things like that? It definitely had that feel of, you know, from Rosemary's Baby to The Omen to The Exorcist and Devil Dog Hound from Hell, and just all these, like, the 70s obsession, which obviously that guy was straight out of 70s Hollywood. I mean, that's the thing. He's still, and it, this obsession with, you know, the with devil movies in the 70s that were popular and then kind of went away.
An aged Robert Evans.
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of the subplot from GTA 5, where you sort of... for the old Hollywood guy who's like, he's well respected, but his movies have definitely fallen on hard times.
That's what I thought about too. Yes.
Yes. Now he's Grand Theft Auto.
Guess what I'm buying on the way home.
Exactly. You just realized you made him buy it.
Yeah. It's a fun game. I don't want to play it again.
Nicole's listening. I'm buying Grand Theft Auto 5 on the way home.
And you know what she's in there? I knew it.
I my phone went off. You're not.
But no, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if that was the idea, is that, like, even these guys can fall on hard times.
Yeah. Like, the devil doesn't have that much. Like, movies aren't that popular anymore. They're in video games now. That would be the sequel.
How do I buy that this studio's going to get back by placing their, like, is that the thing? Are they selling? Have they not been able to get these hot young nubile ladies for a while? And we finally got one, and if we sell her soul to the devil, we'll be back on top. And so, you know, they're almost sacrificing her for themselves because they're not doing it to be selfless, obviously.
Well, desperation breeds desperation.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, yeah, I don't know. All of that part was confusing. Like, even the point when they brought up Astraeus the first time, and I was like. They acted like we were supposed to know what it was for a second, and then they finally backed into an explanation of it, and it was like, okay, I know what you're talking about now. It felt very much like the Jade Unicorn is what it felt like to me.
Maybe I'll plug here. Maybe I'll forgo Tyler's book for
Jay Halpern's old
Jay Unicorn. I'm gonna do that.
Sorry, Tyler.
Hey, coming up in a couple episodes, we'll have an interview with a horror author, T. Blake Brady, by all three of us. It'll be very interesting.
It will.
How Tyler reacts to our attack on T. Blake Brady.
I know. Turn into an O'Reilly segment. Thank you. I'll take it.
Is this true that...
Is it true that you stole this wholeheartedly from Dan Brown? I don't know.
Is it true? Does the house really boogie?
I was expecting all sorts of dancing, but I got no dancing.
That's a joke. Yeah, a guy who saw the car was like, "Is this a book about dancing? Ha ha ha!"
Who put that on there? Who said that? Who made that joke?
Somebody at work.
God damn it! I wish I could have had that joke.
And he made it weeks ago.
I imagine that it's a. I also think that it's a.
You got beat by weeks.
It's fun.
And weeks.
Boogie, like I think of someone with a picking their nose and throwing it on something. Like
a boogie
house.
That's actually what the book's about. You spoiled the ending of it. It's actually about a man's boogers coming back to life to kill people.
Oh my god!
It was like a Lewis Satcher, like a sideways story from
a
house made of school. It's like
the house made of boogers.
Yeah,
the student from the boogie house.
The house that boogers built.
What if 20 years from now we're having that conversation that, like we talked about. Nightmare on Elm Street being the final.
The house that Freddy built?
Yeah, the house that Freddy built. We have the house that Boogie built.
Yeah.
Because we're in a house. That,
or no, it's just that Tyler's on Boogie House 20.
We're all three living in some sort of halfway house. Mm-hmm. That
no, listen.
Talking about this and no one's listening.
Listen, it's always been understood that if any of us make it, that they bring the rest of us along.
That is implicit. Is that if one of us makes it, all of us makes it.
I will be a great part of an entourage.
Every successful person has an entourage, and we all need that entourage.
Well, we're on the way there. So
your drama.
Hey, listen, I'm not going to pretend. Turtle. Hey, I'll blow someone. If we bring turtle. It back, let's bring it back to Starry Eyes.
All right, he's turtle.
I'll suck your cock for a part.
Well, there's our sound clip for this episode.
I'll suck your cock for a good...
You didn't have to repeat it. We already had it.
I just like saying cock. Cock is like the dirtiest of the dick.
Yeah, stop it.
I'm sorry. Our grandchildren will listen to this 30 years from now?
I'm just thinking in 2 years when your son cares to listen to the podcast and he's like, Daddy, what is this?
Oh, he goes to sleep with his podcast.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Daddy, guess what?
Bores him?
Yeah, he's like, Daddy, guess what? Your voice puts me to sleep. Let's listen to this.
I do like after she... I do like that she has the moment. It doesn't. She turns it down, and I like that the movie doesn't totally it demeans this character, but it's not like exploitative of women as a whole. And I do think that that's a really interesting choice this movie makes. It doesn't like it chooses to use the character, but not use the person. And I think that's like moving forward and being a little bit more thoughtful about horror movies, and like we have been watching a lot more thoughtful horror movies recently. I think this movie does a really great job of respecting the character and like who that person is, even if she turns out to be a total dick, and I don't think she deserves the kind of respect that the movie gives her over the course of the film.
But because the thing that's fun is I think that's the thing we learn, like when everyone else is like, when she gets all mad that Jessica told what had happened to her, I mean, everyone was on her side because they thought, hey, yeah, skeezy old guy, don't do that. And ultimately, I don't know that any of them would have, but she is the one who not only would have, but did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what is it ultimately that drives her to that decision? Well,
Brian already told us it's because of the banality of the conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, was that? Yeah, that I guess that was the thing.
I mean,
that
I see Drew's side of things of like maybe she sees this. The guy that she thought she could have a part with, indie director that, or not really indie director, but this down in his luck kind of
homeless
director.
Guy, the guy living in his, literally living in his homeless car. I mean, yeah, like it's fine, but I do think it's interesting that she didn't make this totally, like this wasn't totally of her own volition. I mean, she made the choice, yes, but she is also high on an ecstasy type drug. So it's kind of like
straight.
I mean, when you are on substances, it's easy to say like, yeah, what I'll do. I guess I'll make that choice. Like, even if it's a bad choice, but then she is totally punished for it. But then also she later is given another bargain, which is like, you can die and no one will care. Or here's the catch: for some reason, murdering all of your friends will make you be reborn.
Be reborn with Lee Press on nails and and like the girl in Star Trek, the motion picture. And
I love that scene though, like all of the way that she acts with her hands, and it's almost like a Disney movie or like Maleficent or something. I'm just doing.
I'll be
like,
honest. I'm gonna go ahead and give you a little part of an insight into my psyche. Oh, I God. Don't like long nails like that. They freak me the fuck out.
I liked it. I mean, like I thought it was cool. A cool part of the movie.
It fits the part, but I'm just saying, like, as a person, I'm not a fan of that kind of those kind of nails. Prom nails. I call them prom nails. It's like that idea that everybody has to get done up like they're not the real person they are.
Yeah.
I thought,
hey, look at you.
I thought there was a really strangely thoughtful use of nudity in this movie too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there were several moments early on where you could have easily, if you're going to have nudity in the movie, you could easily have done it. I mean, when they ask her to take off her clothes in the audition, and they purposely don't to really be very nonchalant about it once she makes the transformation into this new creature, whatever she might be.
That's interesting.
I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I thought that too was it was interesting. It was obvious that they chose that to do that because when they say, hey, take your clothes off, I kept thinking, oh, we're going to have some nudity parts. Yeah. And then it slowly reveals, like, there's a scene where I think she's in the bathtub or the shower where the water's on her, where you can see,
you almost get a transition to where you see nipples in the white t-shirt.
Right.
And then you just get full on.
And a very,
she's transforming.
She's
almost
transforming, and she's very, it's even more like she's more confident sexual too, like, in her, the way she approaches things. So, yeah, it was a cool use of it.
And I like to think that she didn't actually kill Jessica, that she infected Jessica.
Yeah.
Jessica's going to come back as something like her-esque or something like that. Because, I mean, it's more like she was spitting blood into her mouth. Yeah. She wasn't biting her tongue. She wasn't really pulling her. It didn't look like she was biting her lips. I was like, she was
that's not bad.
Engorging her with, like, her blood or something.
Both of us perk up. Like, oh, engorge.
I will say that the scene where she's asked to disrobe is one of my favorite in the movie because of the way it's shot. So I think that's a very, like, it was a really interesting, the way that the flashbulbs leave, like, sort of leave the residue of her face. Like, you see the, like, the outline of her face after it. All of that was really well done. Like, the whole movie shot really well. It almost feels like, did you guys ever see the movie Bellflower? It was on, it's on Netflix Instant.
I didn't see it.
Like, this movie has kind of a similar, like, cinematography style, and I really dug that movie too. I'm gonna see
I'm really fascinated to see more of what these guys.
Yeah,
Whitmire and
Kevin Kolsch.
Kevin Kolsch and Whitmire. Yeah.
I was really, really pleased by what I saw there, and really am interested to see what more they have to offer.
The part where they're all at the getting ready to go to the Hollywood Bowl, I guess, and they're on the concrete area, and she starts to become a little more assertive in her ideas of what she wants done, and like, no, that Noah Segan cares, like, everything's funny, everything's still fine.
That was funny.
It's all fine. Everything's
funny.
Like, he wanted like everyone just chill, man. Everything's cool. It's not cool.
But I think he's the problem too, because he's also that character in these movies that he was stuck in that world, but between places. When he promised her that role, and then when she sees in the pool him kiss the other girl who she also knows wants the role, that's where the change happens to her drug addled mind, that she sees that's how you get a part in Hollywood. So why the fuck should I sit there and take this shitty role when I can go and just, you know, when I can go and get a gateway role?
Bypass the whole thing.
I can go blow a lesser demon to get a sweet role.
And go blow Wolfram and Hart and get my. You know.
Speaking of sweet roles, Cinnabon.
This is our ad.
Sponsor, our sponsor.
Hey guys. Speaking of sweet roles, Cinnabon is our sponsor.
Get a Cinnabon.
I may do that after this. Now that I think about it.
So let's talk about the end. I kind of want to talk about the end sequence of the film. Like, once I didn't know where the movie was going to go after she transformed, which that was the slow part for the movie. But when it's like you can transform, I was like, what is gonna happen? And I did not expect what actually happened. I know that like the overall pacing of the movie is off, and like this changes the entirety of the movie. But when it turns into a slasher flick, I liked it.
Oh my god! When she beats that one person's face in, I was like, oh! They keep showing
that's
it.
That's
like,
the girl who fell and broke her nose, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that the one that's always the passive aggressive chick?
No.
That was the one she stabbed and slit her face.
She slashes her cheek.
Okay. That's passive aggressive girl. Okay.
I almost thought it was going to end.
Like it affects her mouth. Like she slashes her in the mouth, which is what the problem is. Most of the movie is like how much she comments. Yeah.
So well, it was her cheek. Like what I took was I almost took that she was going to leave her be, but she was going to leave her face ruined so she could never act again. I thought that would have been an interesting choice. Like she lives, but she will never be in a movie because her face is totally fucked up.
But she will be in Time Magazine and Oprah's stuff.
Right. She will get famous. But like, yeah, I mean, this movie has some really interesting stuff, and it's a very thoughtfully crafted film, and it seems to take it, like, it takes itself very seriously, and especially, like, how it goes about plot and pacing. Nothing is done just for the service of violence or gore or being messed up. It has a purpose for everything it does. I really liked how intentional everything in this movie was.
Yeah.
So, after she stabs passive-aggressive girl, she...
And beats the shit out of...
It's kind of the...
Yeah, she does.
Like, the death-proof ending where just, like, the face gets totally crushed in and kills the dude who slips on hair, which I think is an interesting way of...
Right.
Like, that's an interesting nod to the earlier part, like, playback to
the
earlier...
Like, the idea of, like... As I was watching, I kept thinking, like, this is a very good... This is a good representation of what I imagine, like, getting this done to you would be, like the stabbing.
Yeah.
Like where she was stabbing, like right in the lower back. Like I can imagine that would be, you wouldn't die right away. It'd be so painful though.
Yeah.
And then she like twists it, and it's like, oh,
well, like
God.
With the other guy, when Noah Segan's character was like, "Don't, stop, don't." You know, he's still able to sit there and consciously ask her to stop and doing what she was doing. Yeah.
Ugh.
God Almighty! Yeah, it's awful. One of those things. It made me think about like that whole thing too. Like, what would it be like to actually get attacked like that, where you're just
be the worst.
Can I tell you, I was also really, I was trepidatious because it was looking so much like contracted.
Yeah.
And I was so afraid that it was going to be some zombie shit, too.
Nope.
No,
doesn't take a step too far.
I was like, oh. It's like sigh of relief. Cause
almost
like,
perfectly done. Like, the tone of the end was great. I just finished the Zodiac book, the Robert Graysmith book, which I think I mentioned last week too. But
is that what the movie is based on?
Yeah, and okay. There's a scene that's it's Jake Gyllenhaal plays the guy who wrote the book, and there's the scene where they're in the movie. It's portrayed well, but where the couple's out and it's the light time, yeah. And he just ties them up and starts stabbing the woman in the book. In the book, he stabs both of them, the guy and the girl, and he stabs her like 27 times, and she's just like thrashing the entire time. And it describes how like she didn't die immediately. It took her an hour to die, and she almost lived, but they were in a place where they couldn't drive out, so they had to, like, the guy who got stabbed, like, waved down a fisherman who was going by on a boat, and the entire time she was just like begging not to die. That seems like the worst absolute way to go, is like having been stabbed and just slowly bleeding out and knowing you're dying. That's Jesus. Seems horrifying.
And the smell of those fish, I'm sure.
Oh, God almighty.
I know.
And it was 70s, so you know everybody smelled bad.
That was awful. I apologize for that. That was terrible.
Whew. It's almost like the movie Torn Curtain, in a way, the Hitchcock movie where they try to kill this person and it just takes them for, like, it's not easy to kill a person. I wish there were more movies that sort of portrayed the reality of like how difficult it actually is to murder a human being.
Or even just the psychological impact of what that is, to actually have the experience of what's going, not making light of it, like Throw Mama from the Train, where you're like, yeah. Oh, I'm gonna kill my mom. Or like,
Is a remake of a Hitchcock flick.
Right, exactly. The Strangers on a Train, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Just the idea of how bad it would be to actually do that. And that's what's good about besides the face smash, like, hers are very painful. Like, people are just writhing as she is killing them.
I think the rock face would also be very painful. You said except for the rock face.
Well, it seems that that's over quickly. Like, once she starts smashing,
and then she just smashes for a while.
I wonder.
Was it three people, one nail gun? What's the horrible?
Hammer?
Three guys, one hammer.
Oh, my God.
God.
Nail gun?
Someone got nailed.
Ugh. So, anyways. Yeah. The end of the movie is... I wondered what was going to happen after the deaths. Like, I had no idea that it would be a literal rebirth, like a Matrix kind of ending to the movie.
How about the idea, like, whenever I get under my covers, it doesn't seem that spacious. There's a couple of like scenes where she's under the covers, like, man, there's a lot of space to move around under these covers.
I did like the stylishness of the shot.
Yeah,
like we were standing up. But
and honestly, it kind of made me remind me of the Babadook, like when the mom's under the covers, action under the covers, action in Brian terms, but yeah.
It reminds me of A New Nightmare. That's always the movie I think about when I think about like how big covers can be, like when Heather Langenkamp pulls the covers over her and then it's just this vast, wide world. And that's kind of how I imagine it as a kid. Like, oh my God, there's so much room under here. And also, it will defend me from chainsaws.
And there are snakes.
Yeah.
Don't get too close to the bottom.
At
the bottom,
that's where snakes are.
Yeah, up close to the pillows, it's fine.
Snakes at the bottom. I almost really wanted it to end really negatively, where she got dick out of it, like nothing, that's what she just died, and it was just to replenish them, that was where I was at one point. I was kind of hoping it was going. It was just a complete and utter lie that she was going to get anything. She just had to agree to it so they could get what they needed out of it. That was it for a moment. Where I was kind of wanting to go.
It's so, I mean, that movie's so grim. It's really, I mean, I guess it's not, but I don't know if I
see you on Friday nights.
It's a fairy tale.
As we're sponsored by NBC, if you watch Grimm on Friday nights at 9 o'clock.
And then Constantine afterwards.
That Grimm, you know, that's a really great television program.
Now you sound like an old man doing Saturday football. I love that.
That Grimm, that's quite a television show.
After the game tonight, make sure you turn in to CSI New Orleans.
CSI Cincinnati.
CSI Akron, Ohio. We're going to be on there. They're talking about a lot of people died.
CSI Fargo. That's a good one.
Fargo. I thought you said Fargo.
I did too. I was like, we made the comment about Tolkien thing earlier tonight. I was like, oh, Fargool, is that a new Mordor? Fargool.
It's just the best edition of CSI.
Yeah. CSI Mordor.
That's an SNL sketch waiting to happen.
Let me tell you what.
So you walked over and you just threw the ring into the volcano. I don't believe
Shadow of Mordor had a CSI, it'd come after the guy that you're playing in Shadow of Mordor, because that guy is destroying orcs and Uruk-hai.
But just imagine the Uruk-hai who rips off his sunglasses at the beginning to get to do his...
Hey, human, you're going to go to die on this one.
Dun, dun, dun.
I was trying to think of an orc-related pun that I could use to pull the glasses off to, like, What is an orc? I was going to say, like...
World of Warcraft?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, a champagne-related death, and he corked him.
Uruk-hai are tough, but Uruk-dai.
Uruk-hai. More like Uruk-dai.
It's like...
Yeah!
God, this is painful.
Hey guys, we've devolved into
CSI jokes.
CSI Tolkien jokes, guys.
I know that she died by sacrifice. Maybe they'll call her Joan of Orc. Joan of Orc, get it?
No, I get it.
It's very clever. How's that working out for you, being clever?
Oh my God,
that's from Fight Club.
Orcs, like guys. So yeah,
This movie's amazing. This is one of my favorite movies we've done for the podcast, and we've had a long string of good movies.
Yeah, one of my favorites we've done in many a moon.
Yeah, and we've done some good
in that top, probably in that top set. Outside of the obvious classics that we've been doing recently and all of that, but of the out of the blue indie stuff, probably. I mean, I get why all the buzz out of Fantastic Fest was so positive. No, it's really worth watching.
And hey, if you're watching Starry Eyes, make sure you're listening to Don McLean's Starry, Starry Eyes. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting the disapproving parent from Tyler.
He's getting the, if we had a hook, we'd totally Showtime.
Wrap it up.
Off the stage.
Wrap it up.
I'm a dad, but yet Tyler's
boo you.
Tyler's shaking head makes me feel bad about myself. And like I imagine he's the teacher that I've like, oh God, this teacher just doesn't get it.
Boo.
Starry, starry eyes. Boo.
Yeah, I would put this up there with all the best things we've done from The Battery all the way up to Almost Human.
I mean, yeah.
So yeah, it's on VOD right now. Rent it yourself, watch it, you know.
I was trying to think of the worst things we did real quick to make a joke about The Battery or this, but I
can't think of a really, like,
Yeah, I forget about the bad stuff a lot quicker than the good stuff.
Also they made something, so like...
Hey, listen, guys, we're watching a lot of good stuff. Deal with it.
Yeah, and we have a good string of movies coming up, too, because we'll probably dig back in to do ABCs of Death and VHS Viral, so...
Housebound,
yeah, so I'm really excited about the future of the podcast.
And if you're listening, next week's Thanksgiving, so we're going to take it's kind of a break, but not. We're going to release an older episode we have, Citadel. So you'll get to hear about us talk about feral children.
What I'm going to do is next week on Wednesday, I'm still going to Ustream during this, but I'm just going to sit here silently for an hour and just play the episode through the speakers.
Then Skype me, because I'll be at my parents' house. You can listen to them.
I won't be in town. So no Ustream next week, but go listen to some Venomous Maximus.
If you want, I'll Ustream our Thanksgiving so you can hear all the dysfunction.
Hey, and because Tyler wants it, go get Boogie House.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Get my book.
Tyler's written a book. That's a huge achievement.
And a huge book, Brian says.
And it's a fucking big book. Like, yeah, don't expect to get like a small, like, 200-page book. This thing is massive. I got it. Like, this is heavy. How did I get free shipping on this?
Yeah, pick it up. It's now the top... entry for the, like, if you look Amazon Boogie House in there, it's the
if
top
you
one.
Boogie House, it's the number one
the
entry.
Kindle one's
well,
still
before the- Canned Heat had an album called The Boogie House Tapes, and that was the top entry, and now mine's topped Canned
is
Heat.
They've overtaken Canned Heat.
Is it a song in the summertime on there?
Yeah.
Summertime. That's Mungo Jerry. God damn it. What does Canned Heat sing?
I don't know. You know the Summer in the City? I don't know.
No.
In the summertime when the feeling is right. That's Mungo Jerry. God damn it.
I'll keep that in mind for trivia. Thanks.
All right, guys.
Generating canned heat. Boogie House.
I'm sure that was your cue.
Oh, hey, I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time
on the Horrible Podcast.